Welcome today to an interview series with Outstanding Professionals. I'm Stephen Ibraki, and I'm conducting an exclusive interview with Blaine Bay, industry-leading analyst and senior consultant, Sierra Systems, president of KIPS BC, and Blaine will talk about IT best practices and tips for life success. Blaine, considering your very busy schedule, thank you for coming in today to share your deep insights with the audience.
You're quite welcome, Stephen. I've always appreciated our conversations in the past.
Blaine, you got this amazing background, and I've had a chance to have some insight into it, but let's share that with the audience. Can you talk about your early influences and setting your life's direction?
Okay, certainly. I think that very early on in life, I was influenced by our family farm. My family comes from Saskatchewan. And the things that they instilled in me during my time as a youngster was a good work ethic. And I would say that, interestingly now, as I take a step back, I've looked at the different methodologies and best practices that we follow in IT, and I find that they're not unlike what a farmer would do. Another aspect to what I was influenced by was the NASA Apollo mission. I always saw the applied technology there and was amazed by what they were able to do. I had a special interest in that. I had an uncle who got into engineering, electronic engineering, and he ended up working at NASA as a test engineer. And I guess as a youngster, I always thought that some way I would see his face on TV, and of course that never happened, but it was always a special interest to me.
Well, Blaine, can you now discuss how you got into computing, your prior roles, and then some key lessons that we should pass on from these roles?
Okay, sure. Back in the early days, as after I got out of school, I had made an application to the Canadian Imperial Bank of Commerce for a computer operator position. That was in the late 70s, and of course, at that time, we didn't have personal computing, so it was the larger equipment, the mainframes, the mid-ranges that were out there. And I thought the best way to get into it was to get into the larger corporation. And as such, I didn't have a resume. I was a young fellow, green as it were. I put on my suit, walked in, got an interview with the IT manager of a data center, and we talked about opportunities. And within a couple of weeks, I was on the job as a junior computer operator. And that's basically how I got started, and I haven't looked back since. As far as prior roles, since computer operations, I went into maintenance development. And I guess I learned a number of ways not to develop code before I actually started writing good code. And from then, I got into regular consulting for a number of industries. I guess the lessons are learn from the best. And I would consider yourself, Stephen, as one of those category. We have to have outside interest. I think if we just focus too much on the job, then we find that it's detrimental to our health, physically and mentally. And then we have to have internal values. And I guess, as I've indicated, I learned those on the farm. A good work ethic, adhering to core values, I think those are very important. And another thing is to strive to be of service to others. I think it's very important to think about others, not just what can we get out of life for ourselves. I guess those are some key points that I would consider some lessons that I wish to pass on.
No, those are really good points. And, you know, looking back over your long history of notable success, what were some of the most difficult challenges that you were not able to overcome at the time? And then what would you do differently now?
Well, we're in severe economic times today, and this is not the first time we've seen this in Canada. And back in the early 1980s, we had another downturn. One of the problems I had is I never saw it, and I had large investments, which resulted in large losses. And so what I've done differently now is that I'm a little more careful in where investments go, and I try to invest in my qualities internally and things like that in working with others, investing in supporting organizations like KIPS, the Canadian Information Processing Society, rather than trying to think about the dollar aspect. Another difficult challenge I've had is family health. Our family has been plagued with, unfortunately, cancer, And my wife's health is along that line. She has cancer at the moment, and there's just nothing you can do to predict it, because there's no way of knowing what when a person is going to get it or who is going to get it. So I guess the one of the things to recognize is when it happens, deal with it, but don't ignore any early symptoms. If one feels that there's something unusual about their health, it's important to get it checked out. That's one key message. I've heard more often than not doctors indicating, if you'd only come in sooner, we could have done something. I think that was the case, for example, with my father, who died from cancer.
Well, those are good lessons for the audience, so thank you for sharing those. What were the key disruptive forces driving change in your life, and how can we learn from your experiences?
Yeah, disruptive forces. I think one of the key ones are those who erect barriers to success. They become the landmines, as it were, and you never quite recognize them initially. So if one is able to just keep your wits about you and just sort of watch out for situations, managing expectations of the client, because I'm a consultant, it's always important to recognize when there are those who have that approach of erecting barriers to success, and you know, make sure that they don't stop your project in its tracks. And so I guess that's key. And just watch out for the hidden agenda. Sometimes you're in a situation where you're requested to do a certain project, but it's not the reason why they said it. It's for different reasons. And so you go down a path maybe that would be inappropriate. So it's always important to understand the driving factors behind what the reason for the initiation of projects or the termination of projects or whatever.
Can you profile your current roles and the value delivered to your diverse audiences?
Yeah, currently, I'm billed out as a business analyst. I've had that role for a number of years. I guess I've done that even before we had that term of business analyst. Over the years, I've picked up experience over a wide breadth of industries, and I've been able to expand a depth of knowledge in all of those industries. And I guess my specialty has always been financial systems. When we first started out in the 1980s in IT, when it really started to get moving, we found that by far and large, most of the systems were run by the controller, and today called the CFO. And many times we had the financial systems directly under their control. So that was what I learned early on. And of course, I started in banking with the Canadian Imperial Bank of Commerce. And so that's a financial-based system, of course. And so I found that that has really been to my benefit over the decades. And now I find even today, the project I'm on is related to a financial system. So it makes my coverage of the project a little bit more effective.
So, you know, you talk about projects, and you've got this great history of managing many, many projects of varying sizes and different industries and so on. So what are your tips for project delivery?
Certainly. I guess the key one is, I could just say, engage. And I can't say it strongly enough. A person has to engage, engage, engage. A senior team member has to be able to jump in actively in project delivery. Especially when early on in the project, you're starting from scratch. You're making something from nothing. And a person has to have a willing attitude on the project. Tasks are going to change. Roles are going to change. Number of people on the project are going to increase. And so you have to, in my opinion, company needs to assemble A teams for critical service delivery, because they can bring forward the expertise that can leverage the individuals into a much more powerful unit.
So you talked about an A team then. Let's drill into that further. What would comprise the A team, that is capital A team, and
right,
project delivery?
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that I guess I could categorize it as is the individual who would be a versatilist. A person who's got a broad range of experience, both in IT and in business in general. And I think they need to be recognized by their company, whether that's a consulting firm or whether they're employed as staff of an organization. And I think the importance is that these people have the capability to take on a variety of tasks. So no job is too big, no job is too small, in their opinion. These people are maybe what could be compared to sailors who weather a storm. Those who've weathered a storm in the past and work as a team can help get the ship sailing safely through, you know, a bad situation. And of course, we have those kind of storms on projects commonly these days. So with their experience, they can help make sure that there's no panicking, calmly get through these problems, and work our way through to success.
Dwayne, you've got this background in a number of areas, such as software estimation, gathering of business requirements, leadership of development teams, global application development, quality assurance, IT service management, data center operations management, and much, much more. Can you share with the audience some of your best practices in some of those areas?
Oh, certainly. With regards to gathering business requirements, it's very important to think in the terms of the business. Think of it, we have to think of it as IT professionals, that it's our business, as it were. If we think that way, we are able to figure out how to make the best systems for ourselves. Not thinking of ourselves, again, not the hat of the IT, but the hat of the business. And then we can align what we do in our designs much, much better with what the firm needs. With regards to, like, for example, JAD facilitation, in a facilitated session, sometimes you get into a situation where you just have way too many people involved. And one of the challenges can be to figure out who the key people are who can help you make the appropriate decisions, the right depth of the organization, good representation for the breadth of the organization, but not too many, I guess, is one of the key points. Because you need to hear everybody's opinion. If there's too many people in the room, it's just too hard to get that in an effective way. From the perspective of software estimation, I guess the key message here is do more than one type of estimate, and take estimates at different points of a project. And I think the key thing is, once you've made a software estimate, prior to starting a project, then you have to, that's the budget, of course, and you have to compare against that, compare your actuals to that as you go along, and that'll help you be able to manage the project better. As I say, if you can't measure it, you can't manage it, and a good software estimate will help be able to measure your project. I guess the global application development was one thing that I really found interesting. You have to think a little bit differently. The concept of the software factory, as it were, comes into play here. When people are not all geographically sitting in the same location, your specifications have to be very clear, concise, and they can't be changing all the time, because the folks who are doing your application development remotely can't support the changes or even hear the comments that are going on. For example, though, we have good successes. I know the Boeing Aircraft Company has developed their equipment internationally, and they assemble parts from all over the world, even large parts, such as even wings, are developed overseas. So we know it's possible, and we just have to make sure that we are clear and concise and good specs, good direction. The other thing that's to be considered along with that is quality assurance and test management. Make sure that we test often and test early. Some people toss the application over to a test group when they're done. It's best if you have the testing group integrated in with your project team, so that you can, at least a few of them, so that they can direct the test activities. And one of the things as a side benefit you get from that is that they're able to help direct the design, because they will watch for holes in the design, and then you can plug them sooner rather than later after you've spent a lot of work. Another aspect would be once the project is complete and the application goes into production, of course, there's IT service management. And these days, we have a good best practice found in ITIL, and that's the IT Infrastructure Library, which was basically developed in Europe. And when we've observed companies who can take the ITIL best practices and put them into application, they find that they get a leveraged benefit to their applications, and they get better longevity and fewer issues, and they're able to respond to them sooner and more effectively. Then we have data center operations, for example. I think the days of the data center had been numbered in the ways that it was developed early on. Because of the advent of the personal computer, companies felt that they could, with their own staff and a few personal computers, do the same thing that the data centers were able to do. And now we're starting to see a trend of that reversing, where people are looking for hosted solutions and things of that nature. So it's basically the data center coming back in another form, not where they necessarily own all the software or lease the software, but where they provide basically the hardware infrastructure is the big benefit. But and then there's the side benefit of the software benefits that you can leverage as a company. You don't have to buy all the software. You can use their staff to be able to support the thing. And that's one of the things that we've heard as a key cost is constant upgrades. So if a data center is able to do an upgrade for 10 organizations in the same time, then obviously there's a savings that can be passed on. Pretty much it for those areas.
So, you know, I've known you for a while, and I'm really impressed with all the kinds of activities and volunteer efforts that you do and contribution to society, the industry, in terms of the profession itself. So how does public service help an IT professional's career?
Well, I think the intent there is that one becomes a much more valued resource. If you're shown to be not just in it for the buck, but you're there for the promotion of the industry, I think it helps one's credibility. You can speak with, you know, freeness of speech, as it were, and comments you make are known to not just be for your own personal benefit, but for the industry in general. And I think in that way, it lends more credibility to some of the things that you want to discuss in the area of, say, best practices in your organization.
What are some of the groups that you're associated with?
Well, I'm quite deep into promotion of IT professionalism through KIPS, as I mentioned before, the Canadian Information Processing Society. So this year I'm the president of KIPS BC, the provincial association, which is now has the governance of not only certified, but regular members as well in KIPS here in BC. And along with that, I've been in behind the scenes promoting the professionalism at the international level. And we have the IP3 program, which has gone out to a number of member organizations and, I should say more accurately, countries, member countries. And they're looking for international certification of IT professionals. And I've done what I can in the background to promote the international professionalism, to get global recognition for the IT professional, and specifically the IT professional, in our case, in Canada.
And your company itself has been pretty instrumental in providing support, and I'm always impressed with that.
Yeah, it doesn't take very much for our company to support IT professionalism. All we have to do is make the request, and they've stepped up. These days are the times of tough economic times, and so not always as easy to put the financial part of it into it, but I do recognize them for their in-kind effort. We've used their facilities a number of times, video conferencing, printing facilities, and the staff time. They have volunteered when we've had meetings at various Sierra locations. We've used their facilities quite extensively over the years, and so we do commend them for their interest in promotion of IT professionalism.
I guess there's been quite a large number of Sierra Systems people who have served in executive capacities with the nonprofit organizations as well.
Yes, that's true. We've had some of the very, very senior executive partners with Sierra have been promoters of IT professionalism here in BC and in fact, right across Canada.
You know, we talked about IT professionals and, you know, service in terms of public service. Well, what are some of the key values for IT professionals?
Well, some of the core values to me can be summarized down as honesty and integrity. Those are not negotiable. And I think we have to promote that in our organizations as well. And I find that that's one of the reasons why I've stuck around with Sierra Systems is because honesty and integrity are the core values that they, too, wish to be known for in the industry. We also have the code of ethics that the professional associations have put forward, I think that's one of the very key things that we have to consider. And I have a laminated version of the KIPS ethical principles, which has been derived from the KIPS code of ethics and professional code of conduct that we as KIPS members adhere to. And one of the important things I know that has been found there, and that's one thing I hold true, is we have to maintain the integrity of KIPS and the IT profession. So we support and advance KIPS, we support the IT profession, and at the same time we respect the rights and professional aspirations of our colleagues, and we don't come under areas of conflict. We don't put our own personal interests above the public interest, and that of the client or our employer. And so when there's any areas of risk that we identify, we bring those to our employer or client's attention and help them mitigate those risks by good practices.
So where do people go if they want to join KIPS?
Well, we have the website of www.kips.ca, and a person can navigate there and can see the various provinces which are involved, but basically they can get to the main KIPS website and it will discuss how to join. It will also talk about where their contacts. It will also talk about how to apply for certification. KIPS has the Information Systems Professional Certification, and then more recently we now have the ITCP, or the International Certified Professional designation. And so they can get that information again at www.kips.ca.
You know, you have a great business background combined with management and working in different aspects of the information technology field. So from your perspective, what do you see as the most important broader business challenges and then their possible solutions?
Yep. Now, so thinking a little more strategically then, again, I'm answering from the view of IT service delivery and what we in the IT field can do to help organizations. So first of all, I'd say one of the key challenges is sometimes there's an inappropriate striving for perfection. I had worked on the 2005 Tall Ships Festival, and the chair of the committee, a retired Canadian Forces Admiral named John Anderson, had said quite clearly, he said, don't let perfection get in the way of good enough. So there's a point when, again, it's not shoddy workmanship, but sometimes we have to apply the good enough principle and let perfection go for the moment, because we're under severe economic times. Just no time, no money to be able to go, in some cases, above and beyond. Again, that's when we talk about financial systems, there are some core balancing principles that have to be adhered to. But in general, in systems delivery, just being careful not to strive too far for perfection. A second challenge that we can look to is the issue of people being a little bit short-sighted. I guess a bit of panic has ensued in recent year, and so we have to make sure we look ahead. I know when I was on the Board of Trustees of the Maritime Museum of BC, I was invited to go for an evening sale, and weekend sale actually, with the John C. Stennis. It's an American aircraft carrier. And what was interesting is the ship is named for an American senator, John C. Stennis, and his motto was look ahead. So I think it's a good advice for an American aircraft carrier, obviously, and I think it's a good advice for business. Look ahead. Don't be too short-sighted. A third aspect is with regards to where we are in the banking industry. We look at the low interest rates that are out there. There's opportunities potentially for growth, and if a person needs to invest, this may be the time to start thinking ahead. At what point does it become competitive to invest in their organization because the interest rates are low? I know early on when I owned a data center, we were dealing with interest rates at 24%, and now we're way down into the single digits for percent of interest for what's available from the bank. So there's that part of it. So one has to look at the risk-reward then of investing in their company, looking ahead. The fourth thing is I think the people are desperate for survival. I think companies don't want to shut down. And I think one of the results then is there's this desperation to try and figure out how to survive. The challenge is going to be on the stress that executives are going to be feeling. Downstream, these people may end up with more health issues than they would like. And so it's a matter of trying to be able to take a deep breath, as it were, get to work calmly, and instill calmness in their fellow executives and co-workers. Another thing is that we have to be considering the planning that we make for capital projects. If we're going to look at, in a business, look at what's our core delivery, what is it that the company does, think about those and focus on, if you've got a project, a capital project which needs to occur, stay the course. The project needs to be done, it needs to be done, because it's going to have current and future value. So basically don't shut everything down, because, again, that's short-sighted thinking. Those are, I guess, some key challenges and some solutions that I'd propose.
So what do you then see as some future trends out there and their implications and opportunities?
Yeah, well, from my perspective, I don't consider myself an industry guru by any stretch of the imagination, but there are a number of senior key IT resources that are out there and available. The severe economic challenges have cut free a number of senior folks, and so they're currently available, and that trend is going to reverse at some point when those people find a home in a project or in a company. So we have to recognize that that's a one-time opportunity right now, and I think we need to, executives need to keep their eyes open for these gems that are out there. Another point is the role of succession planning. There currently, some of the succession planning is being done by those who are about to retire. So I'm not sure how effective a person can be when they're trying to figure out how to best get out the door, when they need to have planning succession for the executives, the IT executives specifically, in their organization. We'll see. Time will tell on that one as to how effective things are going. Of course, the baby boomer generation is getting to that point of retirement, so, and they're the ones who are the key drivers here. Another point is that more companies, I believe, are going to be looking externally for industry best practices. If one starts to look at the different methodologies that are being promoted these days and formalized, it seems that the opportunity now is for individuals and companies to demonstrate some thought leadership and not be shy about letting people know about the best practices that they've developed or that they've adopted and put into practice in their organization. Another trend that has never changed, and that is technology change. Technology is guaranteed to change. I guess that's the bottom line. And during my career, I have never seen technology stops changing. In fact, the rate of change is increasing. And related to that is the trend is people are going to see the glamour of the toys, as it were, in some of these IT technologies are going to start to wear off a bit. It's tough now for us as organizations to try and keep up and internalize some of the different IT technology that become available, and a lot of it has to do with the individual, the social networking aspect. It's a challenge to figure out how to best integrate or where it's appropriate to integrate the technologies embodied by that inside our IT project. We do see a few that have been really good examples. For example, the wiki. Wiki has become a very amazing technology. It's extended far beyond wherever I thought it would ever go. But so some organizations are now using wikis as ways to document some of their business requirements even, and being able to use that as a means by which to collaborate as they develop iteratively in an agile methodology. So there are others, though, that make it difficult to adopt. And as such, because of our concern of security and privacy, we have to make sure that we adopt this new technology that relates to social networking appropriately. Well, there's some of my predictions of the future and some trends that I've observed personally.
So what are your top recommended resources, and then why?
Well, I would say top recommended resources are, I would say, obviously, KIPPS certified professionals. And I'd say, to me, that's because they are versatilists. They're able to handle a broad range of tasks. They have a depth of knowledge. They are well experienced for what they do. And they know when to call in another resource. I know the CFO of the IP3P had said to me recently, that's Roger Hart, he said, we're like the medical profession. Your family doctor knows when to call in a specialist. And I believe we are like that. We are able to identify when we need someone with a special skill. We are able to provide good advice and from the IT perspective, but we recognize that there are those that we need to call on with sometimes specific technology, experience, or some particular best practice. And so we call them in, and we know when to call them in. I guess that's the key message there.
You've been around for a long time. I'm always impressed with, you know, the different stories that you can share. So maybe you can extend those stories to the audience, you know, from your work or just from the things that you've done.
Okay. Yeah, there was, I guess, because of my experience with financial systems, I had the one situation where I got to work in a manufacturing environment involving aluminum smelting. And I had quite the time at first trying to figure out how can I apply my knowledge and skill to the manufacturing project was to do with production planning. And I guess I sort of had a revelation in sleeping on it, and that was, if you think about metal, the tonnage of metal, as though it were the units of dollars and cents, it all fit. And so I found that the CFO of the smelting plant had said to me after some time, he said he really appreciated the fact that I brought the financial systems rigor into the manufacturing process, because then we could, again, we could figure out how to measure the metal that was going through their plant. And because we could measure it accurately, they found it was easier to manage. So I thought that was a rather interesting turn of events. I never expected that. And another one was I worked with a project manager who did the key management of what he needed on a whiteboard. It was a large project, and yet he was able to boil down what he needed to just those key points that needed managing. And he would ask us, has this task been started? Are you halfway done? Are you just about completed? And he would assemble some sort of a key that would indicate a percent complete. And he would indicate this percent means this. And he had just a very, very few levels, but that one whiteboard managed the whole project. I was amazed. Again, keep it simple. And was sort of the message I learned from that. We had a humorous story. Years gone by, I had been speaking next to a printer, waiting for a document to print, and talking to a colleague. And one of the owners of the company came down and said, oh, we've just opened up another floor here, and we've put a printer down there. Can one of you, or he said to my colleague, can you go down specifically and take a garbage can down there? And the gentleman who I was working with, my colleague, was definitely an IT professional, but his response surprised me. He said, well, I'm an IT professional. I don't handle garbage. And so at that point, I offered, I was a little embarrassed for my colleague, because when the owner of the company asks you to do something, it's certainly appropriate. And it wasn't an unusual task, I didn't think. Of course, I come from a farm, and we've handled all kinds of stuff coming from the back end of animals. In any case, I offered to take the garbage can down, and the owner said, nope. He says, I'll take care of it. And he gave a knowing look to my colleague, and I thought to myself, yeah, that's always best. No job too big, no job too small. Keep that in mind. And I think that was a rather interesting and surprising situation that we went through. Well, those are just a few stories. I guess I could go on and on, but those are just a few key ones.
Well, I like those stories, and especially the last one. It's quite funny in some ways as well. Now, we're at the end of our interview, so if you were doing this interview, what questions would you ask, and then what would be your answers?
Yeah, I guess the questions I would ask would be more to, if I could just switch that to be the questions I'd ask an IT professional. You know, and I guess the key one is, what can you do in your situation to help promote the IT profession? And I think the importance is for the folks out there just to think about what can they honestly do in the local area geographically where they are first, and then on a national scale, what could they do to help the profession, but most importantly, locally. And then secondly, because of the severe economic times we're on, the question I would ask to an IT professional, is there any way you can help a fellow colleague either retain their job or find a job? Because I think it's the honorable thing to keep our colleagues gainfully employed. It may come back and help you one day because you'll be in a situation where maybe you need some help. And so it's sort of the golden rule, as it were, that we learned when we were young. What can you do for others? Not necessarily just what can they do for me. And I think that those are some of the key questions I would ask, besides the question to employers. Like, is there any way you can figure a way to keep your staff? Think of creative ways that you can keep your 18 members. I think that's critical for your future success. So what would you do to ensure that you've got your recruiting and your retention practices in place and make sure that the A-team stays on track? And those are some key questions that I would direct to colleagues and to executives.
Now, those are very thoughtful questions, and I guess as you indicated earlier, there's a lot of pretty experienced human resources out there in the IT field that represent a huge opportunity for companies and organizations.
Yeah, exactly. And I think once those folks are pulled into an organization, I think the level of loyalty that will engender once they realize that a company actually went out looking for them, I think will help retention in the long term and employee loyalty.
Well, Blaine, we will continue to follow your significant contributions to the industry, business, and society. And we thank you for sharing your time, wisdom, and accumulated deep insights with our audience.
You're quite welcome, Stephen. I'm quite honored that you would consider contacting me for an interview.
I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and this concludes our exclusive interview with Blaine Bay, industry-leading analyst, senior consultant, Sierra Systems, president of the Canadian Information Processing Society of British Columbia.